became aware of the power of conversation when I was a stay-at-home mom of three preschoolers. Friends would call and I'd talk their ears off, desperate for adult communication. If I remember correctly, some of them quit calling. When the children became teenagers, I loved driving them wherever they needed to go, as when there was no eye contact, they were much more open and talkative, giving me an important view into their worlds.
Too much of living, breathing, and being alone opened that window specifically with Agnes. When deep in the ugly grays of winter, I called her out of the blue to ask if she would simply phone me for just 1 week for 5 minutes, just to ask me what I was doing for the day, so I could talk to someone, hear another voice. Note, loneliness being one of our conversational themes over the last year, to make my long story even longer, before long it was Agnes who suggested that our 5 minute sound checks were actually interesting, and going on for 20-30 minutes, we would just take off. I firmly believe that conversation saves us. It heals and reveals.
And now, as a boomer who doesn't have any interest in retiring, I am rejuvenated, replenished by conversation. I'm cognizant of the power and the importance of both conversation and story. And Suleika, I appreciate always being able to exchange ideas, thoughts, and words with you.
Well, one other thing. Whenever I mention that our podcast is called The Lost Art of Conversation, the response is always positive. There's always an emotional response of, oh, great, that's a great idea. So going with that, let's go with it.
Let's go. And hello again. It's one lonely boomer. No, it isn't. It's one boomer woman. The other boomer woman is still in create mode. And I've had a few more emails, and it sounds like things are really progressing for her. So I hope to have her back next week or the week after and get back on track. And then you don't have to listen to me all the time. I do have a very special guest today. My guest is a very dear friend who isn't a boomer, but that's okay. We love her anyways. Interestingly, we might almost never have become such good friends, except for one chance situation. Now, I'm going to put you on the spot, Michelle, and have you open by telling your version of our meeting and our subsequent bond, and then I'll tell my side of the story.
Okay, way to put me on the spot there.
Yeah.
So, let's see. I remember meeting you the first time at a training seminar. And it was for like learning how to start an online business. Mm-hmm. And I was looking to do something like that. And I was really excited because it was something new and I was getting to be with other adults and that sort of thing. Because I was with my kids all the time prior to that. And it was in Minnesota and cold. Me.
No, I was rolling my eyes because I just had a car zoom by right there.
I didn't even hear sorry. The car, so
oh,
no.
Sorry.
So it was in Minnesota and cold to me, not so objectively. and I remember we were doing like there were like introductions and things like that, and I remember seeing you and being like, oh, it's this lady from Canada. I'm like, that's cool. And, you know, it's like, they're so like, you know, because I'm like a, you know, ugly American, right? So.
Oh, dear. She is an American in case there's an American listening to
I
this.
I am an American. So, anyway. And it was, I don't know exactly when it was, but after that, but we got paired together. To be accountability partners for a mentorship experience. And, you know, and we didn't know each other very well before that, before we were matched up. And it just became this thing. We met every week and it was just became this thing that I looked forward to so much. And not even necessarily about the accountability piece of what we were supposed to be getting done. But just because there this really beautiful friendship evolved out of this like pure chance assignment, you know, So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because it was that chance, because we were assigned. It's not like pick an accountability partner, which right. I have done since. And, you know, you've really set the bar high. So
yay.
I only have, let me see, one accountability partner that's measured up since. But yeah, that whole accountability partner. And I mean, I guess a couple of things here is, first of all, just the value of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and the other side, this, because so many people are spending so much time online, that to find even a complete stranger, mm-hmm. to meet and set up that program, that routine of once a week. And yeah, it was interesting because I remember what early on, accountability, you'd think, you know, but here I am, I'm the older, mature woman. Well, okay, older.
Not by much.
But I remember the first time you called me on my shit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd done something and you said, yeah, but, and, you know, you sort of, I don't know if you would have disagreed or whether you wanted clarification or questioned my, you know, where I was going on, in the business part, you know, thing. And I remember thinking, excuse me.
Who is this little lassie? Well,
you know, the unugly, the beautiful American girl. I came from a management background. You know, like, and then I realized that, oh, wait a minute. First of all, you're an accountability partner, so you have that right to do that. You've done it very nicely. And, oh, you're right.
It's like, oh, crap, she's right.
So it was really a neat, I guess it really bonded me at that point in time of saying, okay, first of all, get off your high horse, like to myself. And then, as you said, just week after week after week, to the point that if you remember the following year in Minnesota, we were assigned other people. I think I still have those pictures somewhere. And I handed you gingerly and sadly over to your new accountability partner. And I had a fellow from who knows where. And I think we lasted, 2 weeks? 3 weeks? Mm. And we just went back to being each other's accountability partners again. And how many years ago was that?
Oh, my goodness. Ooh.
7, 8?
I was going to say, like, at least 8, because the kids are now 12.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And I think they would have been, like, 3?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it was just a couple of years after I got to Courtney.
Yeah.
And that was 2007. So, yeah.
It's been a long time. It has
been. And so once again, just pointing out the fact that amazing friendships, and to this day, we meet once a week, we chat every Saturday night.
Yep.
And so in this time of COVID, when, I mean, both of us sort of laugh because, you know, sort of sitting in the office or sitting in the house all day is the way we live.
Right.
And I guess the other side of that is we would never have met in a large group like that, left to our own devices, because while we're both fabulous and friendly and funny and all those things that people love to have in a friend, we don't get out there in a large group.
Absolutely.
So yeah, absolutely. We probably wouldn't have connected without the accountability.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, having that initially that arranged marriage of the accountability partnership, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Worked out really well for us. And just on that accountability piece, it's like it was so helpful at the time, even though I joke about it, you know, that it's like, obviously this became this lasting friendship that is just so, so important to me that I cannot even put it into words. But having that accountability piece early on, and we would send Excel spreadsheets back and forth of what we were going to get done that week, and we would have to check off the things that we got done and, you know, those sorts of things. And having that ability to really literally call each other on our shit, you know, like, mm-hmm. okay, so you said you were going to do this, this, and this. Did you get that done? And if not, why not?
Yeah.
You know,
and, you know, for a procrastinator, whether it's mm-hmm. you, me, or that person that's listening to us, what a great way to get things accomplished. You know, whether it's work-related or home-related or personal development-related, whatever. You know, to have that accountability partner.
Absolutely. Because if it's just for me, mm-hmm. I will put it off and put it off and put it off, because there's always something that is somehow more important. But I knew that if I showed up to our call and did not have something done, you know, it was like this, it was this extra little kick in the pants that I really needed to move forward and to prioritize myself and what it was that I was trying to get done,
right?
You know? So yeah, highly recommend. Two thumbs up.
Yay.
But you can't have Agnes. She's mine.
That's right. Yeah. Well, Judith has me sort of, but the good news with Judith is that she sometimes forgets to write down what we're supposed to be doing, what we're supposed to have done by within 2 weeks. But right. Anyway, so all these years later, Michelle and I are such good friends that I do actually forget the age difference, except for when one of the children come on, which they do occasionally, which is great, which is also, I mean, great, but not great. Oh, my God. Watching is bad enough watching your own kids grow up. But when you watch these little tiny people turn into almost teenagers, anyways, so and I'm hoping that, you know, the listeners, Michelle may have escaped that boomer label by a couple of years, but you know, if she's not a boomer, if you don't see her as a boomer, then possibly you'll see her as a daughter. Because there's times when I you're not my daughter, but you're like my favorite sister as well as such a good friend.
Younger sister. I'm a Gen X younger sister.
Yeah. Now, the one thing, Michelle, that you do have in common with a lot of boomers, us boomers, is you had a great job / career. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then you found your partner who became your spouse. Like, you didn't get married right away. But after the birth of twins, yes, folks, twins, it just made sense for you to be a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
For so many reasons, which I think we all identify with. I was in the exact same boat. Husband traveled, so it was just, well, you know, you can't get daycare for all those random hours. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to anyways. You've got little tiny brand new people. And especially the expense of twins. Mm-hmm. It's expensive enough putting one kid into daycare, let alone two. And then you were just starting to see the light of day. So that's when you start thinking about your online business or the possibility of an online business. And it's interesting because my thought as I was sort of prepping some notes is that it puts you back into the land of adults.
Exactly.
Which is what so many of us is just like, please. And the stimulation of other bigger things than, you know, like meals and purees and and Lego in the carpet.
Yes.
And then income, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, so many of us can identify with that of finally getting back into the work world. My memory personally is to, and I know this is your interview, but my memory is buying gifts for my spouse mm-hmm. with money that he'd earned. It was like, I just hated that feeling. And it was not because of him. It was just because of me. Anyways, so yeah, things were proceeding. And then both your husband and both. I guess I'm
how many spouses grouping. Do I have?
No, I didn't mean both, but your husband and your children. So it was the two categories that came out of your two kids and your partner, your husband, your spouse needed you. So, like so many other women, you put your own life on hold, which is what we also just touched on. And do you mind sharing what that was like? Because it's something that we've all been through, or so many of us have been through.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it ends up being a really common thing for women, I think. So when my husband and I first got together, we were both working in professional jobs. I was a web application developer, database developer, working in programming languages and very logical, very, you know, just... You do something with a database or a website and you see the results immediately. You know, it's like it was one of those beautiful things that I just really enjoyed. There was logic to it. It made sense. If you tell it to do this, it does that. You know, all those things, right? And then I became a mom. And none of those things apply. You know, if you tell your kids to do this, they do that. You know? It's like whatever you say is going to be the opposite, total and complete opposite reaction, right?
Now, I'm going to interject and yes. remind you, though, that at least, or perhaps assure any listeners that you didn't have a meltdown because you'd always wanted to be a mom, I think you said.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I mean, as a kid, the only things that I wanted to be was an archaeologist and a mom. And archaeology went by the wayside fairly early on because I'm like, ooh, camping, dirt. All the time. Maybe not.
Have you and I ever had that conversation?
Possibly.
Because that's all I wanted to be was an archaeologist.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I would have loved to take a whole different like life path, you know?
Oh, well, there's still time.
Yeah, I know. I don't know that I could sleep on a cot, but yeah. So the other thing, if I wasn't going to be an archaeologist, you know, the other thing was, you know, to be a mom. And so it was definitely something that we worked towards, and that was definitely a conscious choice to get pregnant, to have children. The twin part was definitely a surprise. That was not expected. But, you know, we joke about it. We got the 2-for-1 special and, but yeah, so I had this great position, and then I got pregnant with the twins, and towards the end of the pregnancy, it became a little bit more of a high risk situation with my blood pressure going out of control. And so I was forced onto bed rest, and that changed a lot because it became, okay, this is my job now, is to keep these little babes cooking as long as I possibly can. And that became the sole focus. And I had already planned on taking the first 6 months off from work because it was twins. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to be ready in like 6 weeks or 12 weeks or anything that anybody else thought would be a good plan for me. So I had already planned to take the first 6 months off. I did go back to work briefly after those first 6 months. And it became just so challenging because tried so hard for so long to have kids and then to leave these little itty bitty babies to go back to work was really hard. And even though I loved what I was doing, the amount that I was earning, even working in a professional position, getting paid very well with great benefits, still did not cover having two kids in daycare, two infants in daycare. It just didn't make sense when it boiled down to it, you know, that there wasn't enough left over to be earning to make it make sense. And so I stopped working for a while. And then there was this real sense of loss on some level for me. And I mean, I love my children more than anything in the world, and I would not change that for anything. So don't get me wrong about that. Okay. I don't want to hear any hate comments about, you know, your children are a blessing. Absolutely they are. And I lost myself in motherhood because I put all of my focus into being a mother. And being the absolute best mother I could possibly be. And I stopped doing the things that I needed to do to really take care of myself, to do self-care in a deeper way. And part of that was doing something that made me feel purposeful on a personal level, that only I could do this thing, was definitely there with the kids. But there's also a mental stimulation that I was accustomed to with having worked with databases and programming languages and, you know, things like that. And instead I'm watching Little Einsteins and the Octonauts. And those are both great shows that I have a deep nostalgia for now. But when you're in the thick of it, in the absolute thick of it, and I felt really lost and needed something for myself. And also having all my life, you know, I started working when I was still in high school. You know, I had a job from the time I was in high school all the way up until I had my kids at age 38. You know, so that's, I mean, it's 20 some odd years worth of being accustomed.
She's good at programming. She's just not very good at math.
Right. I know. I'm like,
I'm joking.
Don't ask me to calculate right now. you know, that just, I had been supporting myself. I had been earning my own way, so to speak, that sort of thing. So like when you talked about buying the presents for your husband with the money that he had earned, or, you know, those types of things. So it really shifted a dynamic, I think, in my relationship with my spouse as well. For me personally, I don't think he sees it that way, but for me, all of a sudden I'm in this very 50s suburban housewife role that I did not ever imagine for myself.
Well, and I think that's where, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you for
yeah,
just a second, but like for boomer women that are like, especially the ones that are older than me, but even my age and a bit younger, that whole stay at home parenting mm-hmm. homemaker, not allowed to use the word housewife in my life, a homemaker role was definitely on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, quite a few women of my generation did have good careers and managed to go back to that. I can't imagine doing it with twins, but that's just a whole nother matter. But where I'm noticing your experience is in my daughters,
mm-hmm.
where one definitely, her and her spouse, because they live in a big city, they make ends meet as long as they're both working.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, the two kids are far enough apart in age that they've only ever had to pay for daycare for one at a time.
Right.
My daughter in Vancouver, as you well know, her husband is financially secure enough that she can stay home because she would have been what you went through of like, oh my God, like how can I do this? So I'm really grateful that he earns enough money that she can do that. But I think your generation and younger, the women had more professional careers because more and more career possibilities opened up.
Absolutely.
So to go from like a programmer database kind of person that's really a complex job to baby bottles, diapers, purees, etc.,
mm-hmm.
would have been such a greater swing of the pendulum
mm-hmm.
than going from, you know, a hotel clerk I was a hotel clerk, so I'm not coming down on hotel clerks, a hotel clerk, that sort of thing, into a homemaker role. It wasn't as professional a role as you had. So, and that's what caused me to think about my daughter. Like for any listeners, if they can't quite identify, then maybe their daughters can. And I think you're giving some great insights. You're speaking so well that I'm thinking if I was listening to you, I might understand my daughter a bit better.
Mm, yeah.
So I do appreciate that. Now, life transitions are crazy at any time of life.
Yes.
But on top of all the transitions, then your husband says you're moving cross state or downstate or something.
Yes. Downstate, I suppose.
Which I can only imagine the flurry after the last couple of years you were, you know, having.
Mm-hmm.
But judging from our chats, it's actually turned out to be a good thing.
It absolutely has. So we moved from the San Francisco Bay Area down to the LA area. And my husband still has the same job. It's just in a different office of the company. And it actually has been really great because we're a lot closer to my family. Where we were really isolated in the sense of not isolated from people because we were in the Bay Area. It's not that there weren't people around, but it's just, you know, because there were. It's just feeling isolated because I was at home because I was the primary caregiver of the two kids, because we were homeschooling, because both kids have challenges. My son has autism and my daughter has ADHD. And homeschooling for a long time was the best way to get them what they needed. And it also meant that I was out of the workforce longer. It also meant that I didn't have as much time to nurture friendships to get out of the house and connect with people. So moving down here to Southern California has actually been really great because we are now in the same city as my brother, who I have a good relationship with, and being able to just see him and step out of the house occasionally in more of an adult role. those sorts of things. To be careful how I word that. That could sound really bad.
But you're able to help him out professionally because of your tech background.
Absolutely.
So, you know, not only do you get to spend the social time with him, but on a professional level.
Definitely.
Too.
It's been good because it would have been harder to do a lot of the work that I'm doing now. So I've transitioned a lot of what I'm doing career-wise. I've left behind sort of the database programming, the website application development, those kinds of things. Because too, once with that type of position, once you're out of the workforce for a while, like things are moving just at lightning speed and new things are coming along. And it's really hard to reskill at the same speed as tech develops, unless that's your full-time job. I've reskilled in a lot of ways, and now I'm helping him live stream meetings and services and things like that.
Which is an interesting, you know, some of this has come about because of COVID.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, so once again, those little hidden, you know, heaven forbid with COVID, and, you know, we all wish it hadn't even reared its ugly head. Mm-hmm. But given the fact that this is our reality.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So we had been already talking about getting the live stream project underway. And what COVID did is it just absolutely sped that process up. It was like, okay, we got to figure this out sooner. What's the technology we're going to use? Okay, here it is. Okay, let's get the camera. Let's do this, do that, do that. And then boom, next week we're going live. So it sort of gave us this push that we needed to say, okay, let's just do it rather than...
And he could never have done that without you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's not his wheelhouse.
Yeah. Well, and I'm working with a friend right now who, similar to your brother, mm-hmm. it's like, okay, like he's going to listen to you or to me. Because that is our bailiwick.
Right.
So he doesn't even know what he needs.
Right. Right.
So that's where you fill in that with your brother. Mm-hmm. Now, the other part of being so close to your brother, of course, is that you are, like many other boomer women, part of that sandwich generation. Not yes. that your parents are old, but they do have their own health issues. Mm-hmm. So again, at least if you're in the same town as your brother.
Right.
If they come visit, it's a, you know.
Exactly.
Like some balance off and with the work and jobs and kids and everything else without parents wanting more of you, of a you, more than of you than you have. Which if you're in another, you know, whole nother city and they come, it's, you want to do that. You try to do that, but something always slips through the cracks.
Right. Right. It's nice in that sense too, because it's, I don't know how to word it. It's not sharing the load because that sounds really negative. But yes, it allows us to spend time together as a family and still function in our everyday lives and have somewhat of a normal routine happening where the kids are still doing school or my brother still needs to get something done for his work or, you know, whatever. But we're still able to...
The parents still feel like
exactly, they, exactly. Like yeah, they still yeah. feel like it was,
and yes, you use the word load, but when parents have health issues, it can be mm-hmm. some description of a load when they come to visit.
Right,
you know, they're out of their usual routines and their usual just everything's, mm-hmm. Whether it's the doctor's office or the store or whatever. And so, yeah, when you're being able to share that load, in quotations, I'm doing little air quotes here that nobody can see.
Right. I can see them. I can feel them. I can feel those air quotes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then, of course, your husband, too. His, mm-hmm. You're in Southern San Francisco or Southern California. His mom and granny are over in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And granny's not getting any younger, certainly, even if his mom isn't very old.
Right.
So once again, yeah, on all levels and on every angle, you know. Mm-hmm.
Well, and like we said earlier, my kids are now 12, you know, so it's like they're starting to kind of get a little more independent, but they're still definitely need mom. Mm-hmm. And so, well, sure. You know, yeah. I'm, like you said, it's that sandwich. That sandwich generation. It was so funny the other day because my mom called, and so she always calls me first for tech support, right? Given the tech background, right? So she always calls me first. So she called the other day, and I don't even remember what it was that she was asking, but it was one of those things that if she had clicked through, it would have been obvious what she needed to do, but she called me first prior to clicking through. Because she wanted me to walk her through it. And when we got off the phone, I looked at my daughter and I said, okay, so here's the deal, right? Sometimes you're going to get annoyed at me.
Learning moment.
Yes. And that's okay. And sometimes I'm going to get annoyed at you. And that's okay. You know, because I mean, she's seeing this whole thing happen, right? She's hearing me talk to my mom and being like, oh, geez, what's going on with grandma, right? You know, and I'm just like, you know, having this conversation about there is this generational mystique.
<You know>? But I think those conversations are so important because I know my kids especially, mm-hmm. and now because of my work more recently, my grandson, my eldest grandson, in my case, it was dementia. Mm-hmm. So they do understand that this is a possibility as parents and people you love get older. Mm-hmm. And so same, you know, your kids are seeing that there's going to come a time when the older person does need support in things that we take for granted, perhaps. That Absolutely. Might be the easiest way to, yeah. And so just, yeah, maintain your cool and talk them through it.
Right. Yeah. And we had that for me when I was a child, because we would, every summer, we would go to my grandparents' house, mm-hmm. and my grandmother was taking care of her mother, so my great-grandmother. Okay. And so I saw that on a regular basis, and I had that sort of understanding of those relationships and of the caring for the elder at the same time caring for the younger, right? And it's like being my grandmother very much was like this triple decker sandwich, you know?
Yeah. Clubhouse.
Exactly. But yeah, it's a powerful thing. So yeah.
I guess we should think about wrapping. You and I get talking and we can talk for hours.
I don't know if I said anything that was even useful, but.
No, absolutely you did. And where I'm going to close with this is, I don't know if I've told you this, but the other place of value that you have in my life is, like, you talk about the kids, you talk about careers, talk about that, but you are also so socially conscious. Mm. And so socially aware, whether it's LGBTQ, whether it's Black Lives Matter, and some of these areas are areas where it's really good that you challenged me on our accountability calls way back when, because you're so involved and so aware, you can call me on stuff that I say. Mm-hmm. And you can explain why, which is great. Mm-hmm. Now, the podcast that we're doing is called The Lost Art of Conversation. Mm-hmm. And through conversation, I know that, you know, you've helped me see so many things. And I'm not saying that, you know, I'll just ask Michelle. No, I do. I do my research, but I'm doing research too, probably because I whether I see your posts or we talk about things and I hear your viewpoints, you have really opened my eyes. And therein, too, is the value of friendship, of conversation. So I thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I mean, I think it's absolutely important that we have friendships and relationships where we have things in common, but also that we have things that are different about each other, and because it does, that sort of diversity, it lends itself to growth and to expansion. I think that if we stay always with our same,
homogenous group.
Exactly. And whatever part of you that is, if you're always with the same people, that it's just reflecting back this same viewpoint and the same ideas, you know, that it's hard to grow if you never see anything else, right? So one of the ways in which our relationship, I think, has really helped me is just the ability that you have to listen to me in my totality. You know, there was no part of me that I feel like I couldn't bring to you and say, this is what's going on, or this is what's happening in my life right now. And I've been through a lot of changes.
I intimated that through our talk,
yes,
you know.
Yes, I've been through a lot of changes in the last few years. And you have supported me so wholeheartedly throughout all of that. And that chance arranged marriage back in Minnesota has absolutely changed my life.
Aren't you glad you bought that too?
Exactly.
Oh dear.
So,
okay, well, I think that's a really good note to end on. Thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Absolutely, my pleasure. My pleasure.
And the usual rules apply, folks. The link to join the conversation is in the show notes. And Michelle.
Yes, that too.
My guest. My guest, Michelle, really appreciate it. Thank you.